The following podcast is a Super Network production with your hosts, Super Marcy.
Yeah, definitely a step up, but, you know, that could be perhaps maybe this script just worked. Maybe it was just the fact that it had Eric Roberts being all Eric Robertsy.
The terrible Australian, B. Jemine.
Why doesn't the vampire just leave? It's not like that he's being held there against his will. And we've seen him a few times on top of built-on roofs. Like, why does he just piss off and leave?
It contains coarse and explicit language.
The housemate dude, I was like, why the f*** are you dressed like Constantine? That was just weirding out the whole time.
Mature themes.
You know, it's your wedding day and everyone always has cold feet and they sort of... This is kind of more the extreme version of that kind of scenario. Like, should I marry a serial killer or not?
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
For more, please visit supermarcy.com and show your support at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy the show.
G'day everyone, this is B. Jemine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome to episode 19 of Podcasters of Horror, the podcast where we dive into film and TV anthology shows, particularly at the moment, the ones that have been created by filmmaker Mick Garris. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Hello, hello. I'm doing well, thanks, Bede. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, thanks. I've all finished work this morning, and I arrived just in time to record. And I'm looking forward to getting back into podcasters, because it has been it has been over a month since our last show, so.
Yes.
And we're at the very tail end now, Marcy, because we're ending our Fear Itself journey by talking about the last three episodes of the show.
Yeah, Fear Itself was a much shorter journey compared to Masters of Horror, as Fear Itself was only the one season and not even all 13 episodes made it to air in the US. So it's been an interesting journey, but a shorter one.
Indeed, indeed. And we definitely have a lot to talk about with these final three episodes of the show. But before we do, Marcy, we have a very special guest.
Yes, we do.
Who is making her return on the show because she previously was on the episode where we talked about the episodes Eater and New Year's Day. Mm. And that, of course, she is also the host of the awesome podcast, Thank God It's Friday, a horror podcast. And that is Kat. Hello, Kat. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me back. I thought I might have done my dash the first time.
No.
We thought you were like, I watched two episodes of Fear Itself. I that's all I need to see. I don't need to be on this show anymore. I've seen enough that I need to see.
That's it, I'm out. No,
peace out.
And how have things been going with you, Kat?
Really good. Very busy at the moment. I'm about to start my first block of placement for teaching. So that's on Valentine's Day. How special is that? And then in the meantime, just the website Hear a Scream, and we're starting volume 2 stuff at the moment for the book. So I'm meant to be getting onto an email to send everyone. It's on my to-do list.
Indeed. And speaking of the book, which is Hear Us Scream, Marcy and I, we both recently got our copies. Oh, well, I haven't got mine yet because they were shipped off to you, right, Marcy? So
yes, it's they were. It's a very late Christmas present for Bede. And we also haven't caught up since they arrived. So they're well, the book is waiting. And then once Bede has his copy, then I'll be like, all right, I'll open mine and read some awesome horror essays.
Thanks, indeed. Guys. That's so special. Thank you.
No. Well, I look forward to reading the book and reading all the essays. Because I did read the outline of like all the essays that are going to be appearing in it. So I'm very much looking forward to reading all these different perspectives when it comes to the horror genre.
Yeah, and I'm excited to read it too.
Indeed, just like we'll most likely have different perspectives about the three episodes we're talking today.
Yeah,
indeed.
But we'll get right to it. And we'll talk about the first of our final three episodes of the show. First up, of course, is episode 11, which is The Spirit Box.
God, this is beyond lame. You know, this is our last Halloween before you leave for Taiwan. And it's like the most important date in the Wiccan calendar. We could be out running around naked in the woods, celebrating our womanliness. You know what we could do? In the spirit of Halloween...
What?
Have a seance.
You're making fun of me?
No, I just think it could be cool. Well, it's not really the kind of thing you want to play around with. All right, never mind, it was a lame idea. But you really think it's possible to contact spirits? I don't know, I guess so. Do you? Oh, we must go somewhere when we die. I mean, don't you want to believe your mom is somewhere right now looking down at you? Sorry, Shelby, I didn't mean to.
No, it's fine.
I guess it wouldn't hurt to make a spirit box.
What's that?
It's, like a device used to contact spirits. I don't know if it really works. I read about it in one of my books. That sounds cool. How do we make one?
Which was directed by Rob Schmidt, who also directed the original film version of Wrong Turn, and as well as directed the Masters of Horror episode Right to Die. Mm. And this episode was written by, and I'm probably going to butcher his last name, so please forgive me, Joe Gagemi?
I think.
Yes, and he actually previously wrote, well, also wrote the films Wind Chill and Stonehurst Asylum. And this episode stars Anna Kendrick, Martin Donovan, Mark Pellegrino, and Jessica Parker Kennedy. And the plot summary for this episode is Emily D'Angelo is a dead schoolgirl who speaks to her classmates from beyond the grave. She reveals that she was murdered and she wants her friends to help seek revenge. Now, Marcy, this is your first time watching The Spirit Box. Yeah. Tell us your thoughts on this episode of Fear Itself.
Yeah, so with most of them, I just go in. I don't really do any sort of background work or like look up anything, maybe just who directed it. Mm-hmm. So as I started watching this, I'm like, that's Anna Kendrick. And then I'm like, that's Martin Donovan. That's like freaking Mark Pellegrino. What is this? I'm like, there's all these people with this episode. But yeah, look, as far as, I guess, Fear Itself episodes go, this is maybe one of the more interesting ones. But it was slightly, I found it not slightly, but very predictable. And I don't think it's necessarily the fault. It has, you know, a certain amount of time to get everything done. It just felt so overtly obvious that it's like, you know, you need to have the neon. It's almost like, why don't you just have neon signs pointing to Mark Pellegrino saying, "Creepo, creepo, this is the guy." And it's kind of way too obvious that you're trying to pinpoint it to him as kind of a tactic to be like, that's not what's really going on. So I felt like I should have been more surprised at the big reveal than I was. But it's not quite a reveal that you see all that often. And for me, that kind of worked, especially in the last like few minutes. I think it kind of does take a really interesting, like, oh, damn, okay. Like, karma is totally a thing. But, yeah, overall, I would say it was probably, yeah, a better than the average episodes we get with, or we've had with Fear Itself. And the performances are fine. I think maybe they're a little bit too kind of goofy at times, but I ended up just enjoying the episode overall just for what it was. Yeah.
And what about you, Kat?
I really enjoyed this. It felt like a bit of a nostalgic slasher film meets supernatural, but in that comfy teenager sense, like something you would watch as, you know, your middle to late teens and really enjoy it. I really enjoyed it. I was like, wow, this is one of the better episodes of Fear Itself that I've watched, because I continued watching after you both introduced me to the series. But Anna Kendrick felt a little bit out of league for this. Like...
Especially when we know how her career trajectory would be after this, because this was like the same year when the first Twilight movie came out, which was the first big thing most people would have seen her in.
Yeah.
And then a year before her Oscar nomination for Up in the Air as well. So it's kind of interesting seeing it's kind of like an interesting kind of precursor to Anna Kendrick before, literally just before, as she's just about to get big.
Yeah, so exactly. It felt really odd. And I think just because I know where she ended up career-wise, I'm kind of like, wow, this feels like not that long ago. And it really isn't. Mm. It's, what, 2009 or something like that. And, it was a great story. I really liked the twist in the end. The diversion that they tried to put on the teacher was a little bit, like, ham-fisted in a way.
Yeah.
But I really liked how the story played out, and I was like, oh, didn't see that coming, which I didn't. I don't see a lot of twists coming in movies or even like books, video games. Like I'm very, everything goes over my head. So when people even write it poorly, it will still go over my head. So I'm grateful that it did.
Well, this is my second time watching the episode, and I got to admit, sat down to watch this, I completely forgot how this episode ended.
Oh.
Because I'm just sitting there, I'm thinking, like, because the episode obviously kind of puts a lot of red herrings on Mark Pellegrino's character as being...
All the red herrings on Mark Pellegrino.
Yeah.
Like, and I kept thinking, like, it was Martin Donovan who killed her, right? That's who I kept thinking of, because, like, this is the second... Because Martin Donovan was also in Right to Die, so this is him re-teaming with Rob Schmidt for this episode. So I'm thinking, like, okay, he's the, you know, he's Anna Kendrick's father in the film, who's also a police officer. I'm thinking, like, and they put a little bit of things on him at the beginning, and thinking, like, was he the one who killed her? I'm pretty sure he was the one who killed the girl. And then, of course, once the twist happens... and I'm like, oh, it wasn't Martin Donovan this entire time. I completely forgot about this twist. But what I do think is I actually do enjoy this episode overall. Like, it's a pretty solid little episode. And I think what's really good, though, about this, because it does feel like a type of story that is definitely aimed at young adults. Like, you could easily, even though the characters are teenagers or late, you know, late teens in this story, you could easily age the characters down for this story, and it would still work.
You could easily kind of do it with, you know, rather than say, what would they be, like 17, you could do maybe change a couple of things and you could have them be like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Because, look, to be honest, I kind of laughed a lot when they made the so-called spirit box and it's just a pizza box with things pasted on it. I'm like, this is something a 12-year-old might do, maybe not even 12, maybe an 8-year-old. This is not something a 17-year-old would do. That box would have been pristine.
Yes.
It would have been a proper Ouija box.
It would have not been a freaking pizza box. And that was kind of, I was like, really? No.
And someone watches a lot of ghost adventure stuff, like, I've seen proper spirit boxes that they use. So when I saw that, I was like, that's not a spirit box. What are you doing? I was like, no.
That's like holding a pizza box to ransom. That's what that was.
Well, I do appreciate, like, I guess, because having seen a lot of films that use Ouija boards and stuff like that, I do appreciate that we have, like, a Ouija board that basically is the definition of a homemade one. Using a pizza box, cutting out bits and pieces of the magazine to use letters. And they even, as the little, the thing that, you know, I don't know what they call it, but I keep forgetting.
Pendulum?
The pendulum thing. Yeah.
The planche?
Yeah, it's like the thing that they put your finger on and then
Bede, how do you use a Ouija board with your finger? No, I'm not going there.
Well, I like the fact that they actually use their own phone.
Yeah, they use like this freaking 2000s like
flip phone as the
phone was so old for like 2009. Let me tell you, at least in my brain, it was.
Yes,
I think so. But yeah,
I do like the sort of the makeshift making of this spirit box, and you know, I thought the cast did pretty well for what they were given. I think it's definitely Anna Kendrick's show because she's like, you know.
Yeah.
Gives a pretty solid performance all around. Martin Donovan, Mark Pellegrino, they're both fine, but they're not really given that much to do as with their characters. But I did like the actress who, who played Becca, Jessica Parker Kennedy. I thought she was really good, especially when you find out, and spoilers for the twist of this movie, she was the one who actually killed Emily.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Emily, yeah.
Yes. And, like, and I have to admit, it's like, I actually forgot, even though I forgot the twist, I was like, it's actually a pretty decent twist because they set it up pretty well that you don't suspect her at all.
Yeah.
And then once they sort of reveal how she sort of arranged a lot of these things, they're like, that makes sense.
It actually makes sense. And that's why when I'm watching it, I'm like, it's the friend. Because I'm thinking it's way too on the nose to be Mark Pellegrino. Like, for me, that was obviously the red herring. And I thought, you know what? It's still a bit too on the nose to be the dad.
Yeah.
Because it'd be too obvious to be Martin Donovan, right?
Yeah, I felt like that. I didn't even feel that about
Yeah, I'm
dad.
Like, it's totally the friend who's, like, fucking with her because of something. And,
yeah.
You know, but what was the actress that played?
Oh,
name's already escaped me.
Jessica Parker Kennedy, who plays Becky.
Yeah, she was
you
great.
Mentioned it, like, 3 minutes ago or something, but I've, like, yeah.
Yes.
I thought she was awesome, and I think she was, like, she just nailed that part, and then when she turns into, like, total bitch at the end, I'm like, you go, girl. I love this. I live for bitches.
Yeah.
Her performance at the end kind of reminded me, and a spoiler for this movie like that came out 11 years ago, Scream 4 with Emma Roberts' character.
Because
you figure, like, she's, like, the nice girl, and then she, like, switches it, and she becomes, like, an evil, evil person.
Yeah.
And, like the quote-unquote evil bitch character. And then, like, you can see her just really kind of play up that sort of, like, and once, like, you know, Anna Kendrick's character sort of brings up, you were the one who did it. It's like, oh, yeah, I did it. And I'm like, and I got away with it, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the fact that it's like they show all these things, like how, you know, Becca kind of orchestrated everything. And then, of course, you fight. And then Anna Kendrick's like, oh, that was you at the pool whose foot I saw. And she's like, that wasn't my foot. I don't even know what you're talking about. And then, of course, we find out like the spirit, the apparitions that Anna Kendrick's character has been seeing was actually legit Emily. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she somehow made it all the way to, I believe it was Taiwan.
Something like that, yeah.
To seek revenge on Becca.
I mean, she took the spirit with her.
Yes. Well, that is true. That is true. So
yeah, but it sort of had the twist upon the twist, and that's what I think kind of wrapped it up. Even though it was very obvious to me, I think it kind of wrapped it up in a good way. So I did enjoy the episode overall. Like, yeah, there's flaws, but as far as like the Fear Itself episodes go, this is definitely sort of above average in that in that way. And I think the cast actually do really good. And you know how much love I have for Mark Pellegrino. Like, we did meet him at a convention years ago.
Indeed.
And I'm like, mate, I've been a fan of yours since the 80s, and he looks so confused. I think I said the 80s or the early 90s. I can't remember.
Yep.
And then I'm like, mate, you're in no holds barred as Hulk Hogan's younger brother. Like, you that don't think I know this shit. And he was like, oh, my God.
I just remember him from Supernatural.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved him in Supernatural.
I will never forget that moment. Just to speak of Mark Pellegrino, when you said that to him, Marcy, he like legit was taken aback. He was like, I haven't thought about that movie in years.
That's amazing. I impressed the man.
But yeah, I think I will say this though. Like overall, I think it's a pretty solid little episode. Nothing amazing, nothing bad whatsoever. It's just a fun little episode. But yeah. I think it, though, like, this is something we've always talked about, Marcy, throughout this whole journey between Masters and Fear Itself. Like, would this story of this episode work for a feature length? And I would say it actually would.
Yeah.
Like, you could easily expand on this story, maybe throw in more characters to kind of set up more possible suspects who may have killed Emily. Because you're right, because when you only mainly have Anna Kendrick's dad, the teacher, and also her friend Becky, it doesn't really leave that many suspects.
No.
And I think if they, and of course watching the episode, like, you're right, because all the red herrings they throw on Mark Pellegrino's character is just so obvious, like, oh, it's definitely not him. That's why I kept thinking, like, oh, it has to be Martin Donovan.
I was like, it's Mark Pellegrino, look how creepy he is. Like, every red herring they threw towards him, I was like, it's him. Like, they write these things for people like me.
And also, let's not forget, this is actually a Halloween episode because it begins on Halloween night, so which is actually pretty cool. But overall, I really enjoyed this episode. But Marcy, share us your final thoughts and rating for the Spirit Box.
First, checking. I didn't want to, like, say the wrong thing or something because my brain just doesn't work. The Spirit Box, yes. I think it is like sort of just a bit above average for what we sort of had with Fear Itself. And it's a shame that this was one of the episodes that didn't air on US TV because as I've seen, like, those last five episodes that didn't air were actually really good. Yeah, they kind of vary in quality, but they were definitely more on the good, interesting, watch this kind of side. But yeah, look, it's a fun little episode. Kind of, yeah, adds more that sort of teen horror thing that I think kind of works for what this show was, because they couldn't do as much being with a different network and all that. But yeah, if your only experience with Fear Itself is like the episodes that aired, check out the unaired ones, because you will definitely be pleasantly surprised. And yeah, my rating for this is 3 Anna Kendricks being really young out of 5, because that threw me. I did not expect to see her in this.
And what about you? And what about yourself, Kat?
No, I really enjoyed it, especially because it's so different to the other episodes that we have seen through Fear Itself. And having this supernatural teen horror vibe, I really enjoyed it because I like easy to watch anything that I can switch my brain off and be like, cool, sweet, don't have to think too much about it. I really loved the twist, and I loved this whole girl backstabbing kind of thing that they had going on. Normally I'd hate it, but I like it because the revenge was eventually, you know, ensued by the victim. Don't like that they fought over a dude. Don't think that's a good enough reason to kill your best mate.
But it was Mark Pellegrino, so.
And also, like, it's a teacher who's, like, you know, like, being very inappropriate with his students. And, yeah. You know, it's like it's the double-edged sword. It's like, yeah, he was innocent, but at the same
he's
time.
He's still a creep, yeah.
Yeah. Why didn't they gang? Do you know what would have been a better ending? If they all ganged up together and killed Mark Pellegrino.
See, this
he really... do anything? Like, no, nothing by him. He, creepy teacher. What the hell?
We should write a remake of this episode.
I'm going to do a retcon of it.
I guess for me, overall, I think it's a pretty solid little episode. Pretty enjoyable one that I agree with you, Kat, in that it's a very... I enjoy the fact that it's kind of a more teen-oriented episode of the show. And it does remind me a lot of the kind of the more teen-oriented horror films that were around at the time in that, like, 2000 kind of period. It sort of had that same vibe and everything. And it was cool to see kind of early Anna Kendrick as well, just as she's about to be huge and be an Oscar nominee and stuff like that. So, and yeah, it's an overall fun little episode that could easily, I think, could be expanded into a feature if they wanted to flesh it out. So overall, I give this one a solid little 3 out of 5. And yeah, it's definitely one of the more enjoyable episodes of the series. And like I said, it's an easy breezy watch that, I mean, younger viewers could easily enjoy as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, we'll move right along to episode 12, which, of course, is the episode Echoes.
I say I'll go through fire, and I'll go through fire. If he wants it, so it shall be. They say he calls me, so I'm crazy.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. How are you feeling?
I feel good.
I was, in my house.
It was different. It was, decorated like it was the 20s. It wasn't my face. It was this long face and a goatee. There was a woman there.
I started recording the session about halfway through.
And?
Listen.
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, Vault Priest, you ask a lot of nutty questions.
You seem angry. What are you angry about?
Zelda. Zelda's got my goat. I could kill that little slut. Things she says to me, I could slice open her throat, slip in my finger, and pull out her tongue.
Who is that?
It's you.
Which was directed by Rupert Wainwright, who previously directed the films Stigmata and The Fog remake. But probably his best known work is directing the music video for MC Hammer's You Can't Touch This.
I love that.
And, and the episode was written by Sean Hood, who previously wrote the films the Conan the Barbarian remake, Halloween Resurrection, and The Crow Wicked Prayer. And this episode stars Aaron Stanford, Eric Balfoy, Camille Gotti, I probably butchered her last name, so please forgive me, and Gerald Plunkett. And the plot summary for this episode, which I'm reading off Wikipedia, is a friendly man discovers that he was a sadistic murderer in a previous life. Now, Marcy, I know you enjoy episodes that have kind of a bit of more of a high concept premise, and this one in particular deals with past lives and reincarnation. So what did you think overall of Echoes?
Yeah, again, I think this was a solid episode. It took a very interesting premise, and I think it kind of delivered mostly. It kind of does get a bit confusing because it's almost, it treats it like it's a possession through a different timeline rather than being like a reincarnation, because they are copying what's happened before. And I think that was a bit, but it does actually have a really solid cast who are actually all really, really good. And, you know, back in the, late 90s or early 2000s, I loved Aaron Sanford. Like, man, I wanted to marry that dude. So, yeah, sort of kind of like a bit nostalgic seeing him in something and being like, oh, my God, I used to crush on him so hard. And, yeah, so he was really good. And
Eric Balfoy.
Yeah. Eric Balfoy, I could never say his name properly. He was actually really good as well as this sort of, I guess, what was he, in the, like, 1930s character? Something like that. And I found him very believable. And everything else around it, like, I think, you know, they acted in it really well. It just kind of blurred the lines a bit too much that I was kind of getting a bit lost going, is this a past life? If this, like, reenacting like this happened, this is getting a bit confusing. Maybe I didn't pay enough attention. I don't know. But overall, like, I watched it from start to finish. I was quite engaged. I found, you know, the performances were interesting. It had this very, like, visually you could tell, like, when you were in the past, when you're meant to be in the present. So I appreciated that. But overall, yeah, I think it was a pretty solid episode.
And what about you, Kat? What did you think of Echoes?
I wasn't a big fan of the episode, mainly because of that blurred line that Marcy's talking about, where it got kind of confusing for me at one point, because I was like, wait a second, is this possession? Is this reincarnation? Mm-hmm. What are we going for? And we don't really figure it out until he's seeing, I think, his psychiatrist. That's another aspect that I wasn't too sure about. I was like, is this him in therapy talking about it as he discovers what's going on? Some of the dialogue in those scenes kind of fell flat for me, just because sometimes I do need a bit more help in understanding. But that's on me. That's not on the filmmaker necessarily. But other than that, I really enjoyed the performances. Fantastic. I love Stigmata like there's no tomorrow. And
right.
Yeah, and some of those scenes, the way that they're shot and edited and produced felt very Stigmata. I don't know if you guys felt that way, but I was like, whoa, well, this looks like something I've seen before. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. The ending was really fascinating as they show the past and the present together. I really enjoyed that.
I guess for me, I wasn't really a big fan of this episode, to be honest. I don't know. I just didn't find it all that interesting. Like, it definitely has a really cool concept at the center of it, which is, like, a man sort of discovering, like, in his past life that he seemingly brutally murdered a woman. And of course, his best friend slash love interest is the reincarnation of that woman. And they're in this house where all these events have taken place. Like, that's a really interesting concept, and I don't know, I just don't feel like the episode did it in a way that felt interesting to me, and it came across as kind of a bit of a slog. Yeah. I mean, the acting is really good. Like, I think Aaron Stanford, like you said, Marcy, I think he was, like, everywhere at this period. Mm. Like, in the 2000s, he was in the X-Men films and the Hills Have Eyes remake and a bunch of other stuff as well, so I think he's really good in here. And also, Eric Balfoy, who appears in the past scenes, is pretty menacing as well. And he was also everywhere in the 2000s as well. Like
was he in Texas Chainsaw Remake?
Yeah, he was. He was in the Texas Chainsaw Remake.
It's been a while since I've seen that, so I'm like, was he in that one? Was he in the beginning? No, he was in the remake.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not even going to lie, Marcy. Like, I kept thinking, I got, actually, watching this, I actually got Eric Balfoy confused with Jonathan Tucker.
He was also in Texas Chainsaw Remake.
I kept thinking, like, they're the same person, right? But then it's like, oh no, they're two completely different people.
Yeah, wasn't Jonathan Tucker in an episode we've watched for something?
I think he was.
He was in Masters of Horror, I'm pretty sure.
He wasn't, I think he wasn't, actually, yes, he was. He was in Dance of the Dead.
There you go.
So it's all coming full circle. Yeah. And interestingly enough, though, Gerald Plunkett, who plays the psychiatrist of this episode, was in another Masters of Horror episode. He was in Heckle's Tale.
Because
I was looking at him thinking, like, where have I seen that? He looks familiar. Like, oh, I looked up his filmography. It's like, oh, he was in Heckle's Tale. That's probably where I remember him from. So, yeah, overall, like, I think how it sort of treats the past and present scenes, is at least on a visual front, is pretty cool, especially with, you know, like, the past scenes are kind of shot in a very different way. Like, they're a bit more stylized and kinetic. Mm. I don't think things that happen in these party scenes would have actually happened in the 1920s, but I digress.
I feel like no.
Yeah, I feel like probably an exaggeration, but...
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting, especially because it is dealing with past lives and things kind of, in a way, kind of, like, repeating themselves.
Mm.
And... like, and especially because at the same, I think all that stuff is interesting, but I just feel like the episode and how approaches it, it just comes off as a bit boring, and the pacing is a bit of a slog. Even at 40 minutes, it feels very slow. Mm. Although I will admit, though, I think, again, just like the Spirit Box ending, I completely forgot how this episode ended, and I thought it was actually a good ending because the episode kept building up, like, you're thinking, like, oh, Aaron Stanford's going to kill his love interest, but in fact, how it all went down, even in the past scenes, is like she was the one who killed him.
Yeah,
in both the past and the present.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that definitely added something different because it didn't end up going in the way you might have thought. So, I think that was good. But I think what works more is the performances, I think, are more intriguing, whereas the story itself kind of gets a bit confusing, and then you're like, I don't know what the fuck's going on, kind of.
But I do like the idea. It's like, because there's some pretty cool moments in this episode. Like, for example, when he's in having his therapy sessions, when he gets under hypnosis, that's when he reverts to Eric Balfoy's character, and even Eric Balfoy uses his voice coming out of Aaron Stanford. And I like the fact that I think, in a way, his character, Balfoy's character, is aware that he's dead, and it's almost like him, like, trying to kill the reincarnation version of his girlfriend so that she wouldn't kill him again.
Yeah.
And, of course, that doesn't happen. I think that, again, that's interesting, but I just don't feel like the approach just nailed it, at least for me. Like, this is and it also feels like that it's an episode where the concept is more intriguing than the actual execution of the story.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
Yeah, I guess that could be a wrap on this episode. Unless anyone has any final thoughts on this episode before we move on.
No, I was just going to say, did we rate it? I can't even remember.
But I figured we'll do our final roundup thoughts. But Marcy, so your overall final thoughts on this episode and your rating?
Yeah. Again, for me, it's sort of like, average-ish, but, you know, quite still watchable, just like its flaws. And yeah, I give it 3 out of 5. I had a massive crush on Aaron Stanford back in the 2000s.
And what about yourself, Kat?
Yeah, I agree with Marcy. Its dialogue fell flat, and I feel like that happens with a lot of Fear Itself.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily anything on the actors or their performance, because a lot of the time they absolutely carry the episode. And that's the case in this for me. I really enjoyed Eric, and even the reincarnated girlfriend, the one in the future, I think she was fantastic.
I believe it's actually the same actress playing both roles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me just find out just to confirm. My notes are all over the place. Camille Guardi, I probably butchered her last name, so please forgive me, but she plays both Karen and Zelda. So she, it's also slightly confusing. It's like, okay, you got the same actress playing both roles. Why not have Eric I mean, Aaron Stanford also play
yeah.
the past version as yeah. well.
Because I thought that that was the same person, but I wasn't entirely sure.
Yeah, me yeah. neither.
Yeah, because yeah, they got this... like different wigs. Yeah,
mm. yeah. I give this 2.5 Ooh. Stars, just because I think that yeah, it could have been better.
Mm. Yeah, I guess for me, I give it about 2 out of 5 overall. Like, there is definitely interesting elements to this episode, and I think the cast do well with what they're given. And of course, you know, Rupert Wainwright bringing his like. You can't touch this expertise to some moments in this episode. I also stigmata, because like you both, I do agree there's a lot of stigmata, like his filmmaking styles in this episode. But I think, yeah, I think it's, again, like I said, I feel like it's a episode where the concept is more intriguing than the actual execution of it.
Yeah.
And it just feels like it's kind of a one-note type of story. Mm. It's not something yeah. like the episode we talked about on... another episode, Marcy, Chance, which had a kind of a similar high concept premise with a character dealing with his doppelganger, but I feel like they did more interesting things with that to kind of make it like more yeah. compelling.
Yeah,
but this is kind of like the polar opposite of that, at least for me, anyway.
Mm. Yeah,
but we'll move right along to our very final episode ever of Fear Itself.
Yes,
and this episode is The Circle.
The Circle, written by Robert Collins.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, this is so great.
Baby. When did you have time?
Old Robert's been busy after all, huh?
Oh, Brian, we were so worried.
I don't know where that came from. I didn't write that.
Well, of course not.
Robert Collins
Look, I'm telling you, I didn't write that.
Brian, quit teasing. He and his wife escaped to the cabin in the woods for a long weekend. His purpose was simple. He needed to rediscover his muse.
Autobiographical. I like that. But maybe a simple purpose in mind, maybe that would flow.
George.
go ahead, please.
He believed that the tranquility of nature would help him, but it merely made the silence inside his head echo that much louder. After a year of days and nights of failure, he was visited one evening by his circle of friends and associates.
I knew you couldn't keep a secret.
Had nothing to do with this.
They chose All Hallows Eve to surprise him because it was a special night in the man's life. You see, the world of the supernatural had been very good to the man. To all of them, in fact.
Cheers to that.
Cheers.
Yet they, in their infinite wisdom, were not prepared for what happened to them on that Halloween night.
Ooh. Anita, that's enough.
Shani.
No, we need to stop.
Shh. Let her finish.
Come on, it's just getting good. We gotta hear what happens next.
Which was directed by Eduardo Rodriguez. Now, he's probably one of the lesser-known directors that have been... who attached themselves to Fear Itself. But I have seen quite a few of his films. His first film, of course, was the horror film Churandero, which I have seen. It's a Mexican horror film, which was actually pretty cool. But he also directed the action films El Gringo, starring Scott Adkins, and Stash House, starring Dolph Lundgren. And he also directed... so he did those. And also, this episode was written by Richard Chisma and my arch nemesis, Jonathan Scheck. who, of course, previously wrote the Masters of Horror episode, The Washingtonians, and also the previous Fear Itself episode, Eda. So they're back again to write this episode. And, of course, this episode stars my arch nemesis, Jonathan Scheck, Ashley Scott, Victoria Pratt, Melanie Nichols-King, Sarah Deakins, and Eric Keen Leside. I probably butchered his last name, so please forgive me. and this episode, which I am once again reading from the show's official Wikipedia page, a writer stays at a small town to break his writer's block, but his story begins to happen to him and his wife in reality. I think the plot summary could have been a little bit better than that, but we'll move from this, because there's a lot more to this one. But Marcy, so tell us about your thoughts on The Circle.
Yeah, so pretty much these three episodes I all liked to a degree. I felt that were kind of, you know, more above average episodes, and I think this one was as well. Again, a really intriguing storyline with, like, this book that wasn't actually, the writer doesn't remember writing it, and then all the things in this book start happening, like, that stuff, I think, oh, that's kind of cool, like, you know, you look at that, maybe like a Lovecraft, Stephen King type of thing, or, you know, John Carpenter in the Mouth of Madness type of stuff. And for a while, it's like really intriguing. Like, where is this going? But then it feels like it turns into Days of Our Lives for some reason towards the end. And I'm like, why? That was a bit annoying. And then it sort of just lost me at that point. And I was like, huh? It comes up with this whole, like, I don't know, affair, love, cheating thing. And I'm like, where did this come from? Why is this here? I don't get it. But, you know, again, I thought the performance is actually really, really good. Now, while Jonathan Sheck is your arch nemesis Bede, I actually thought he was pretty solid in this. And, you know, the writing, I think was pretty solid, but maybe kind of lost its way a little bit towards the third act, because something like this can be hard to, you know, wrap up, I guess.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And what about yourself, Kat?
I really enjoyed this. It kind of reminded me of like a Grimm episode. So I was like, I am all in for this. I really liked a lot of the special effects that they used, especially the scene where I think his publicist or his editor, I got confused about who was who.
Yes.
It was like his publicist, his editor, and his agent. So those were the other characters. So.
Yeah. So Kate, she throws up like this ridiculous amount of blood and then becomes a character, like a monster from a book that Brian has already written. Yeah. And I thought it was just so great. I was like, yes, an episode with heaps of blood. I really liked the premise overall, that it's an occultist that is causing all of this as a revenge for Brian being a piece of shit. I don't like that the occultist had to bring all these other people down to get revenge on Brian.
Yeah.
Like, if she's a witch, she can just do it without having to murder everybody else, right?
Yeah, it was sort of very melodramatic in a way. Yeah. And I think it needed to be, especially when you had, like, the characters from, like, his books coming out, like, this sort of zombie-ish type thing. Like, all that stuff was really interesting, really gruesome, really, you know, whoa, this is fucking full on shit. Like, that was cool. But then, I agree. It's sort of like, what the fuck was this melodramatic shit? Why is this in this movie?
Why are all these other people getting punished for Brian's shit?
Yeah, Brian, just fuck
like,
off.
He's a sack of shit. Like, why is everybody else getting dragged down for it?
Exactly.
That was my only issue with it, really.
Overall, I really enjoyed this episode. If I had to describe this episode to people, it would be, imagine if Stephen King wrote The Evil Dead. And this is this episode. Because it was definitely Stephen King influences, because, like, they mentioned not once but twice that where they are is in Maine. So.
They did.
And, I thought it was a pretty enjoyable episode. I do remember, like, really liking this episode the first time I watched it, like, years ago. And actually, they even had moments in it that actually legit made me jump. Like, actual creepy moments in this episode. And even though, like, a lot of the blood that you see is kind of more black blood and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they still looked pretty gruesome and cool. And I do like the concept of basically, like, you got Jonathan Sheck's character here with his wife and uncle and the other, you know, his publicist, agent, and editor there at this. And he's struggling with writer's block. And then all of a sudden, these two trick-or-treater girls.
That's right.
And also, this is another Halloween episode as well. Who arrive, drop off this book. And of course, they read this book and everything that happens, like you say, Marcy, is reflective of everything that is happening. And like, they try to figure out ways on how to stop it while basically this black goo is infecting and turning them into these kind of demonic creatures. And I thought it handled the concept pretty well. And I have to admit, again, this was another episode, like, there were a lot of things I remembered about it, and there were other stuff I completely forgot. Because I had just assumed that the witch at the beginning was Jonathan Sheck's character's wife that he left for another woman. That's what I thought it set it up as. But it's like, oh no, she was having an affair with her. because she gave him the power to kind of write new stories because he was suffering from writer's block. And his wife, played by Ashley Scott, was not aware of this. And I think it's interesting in that regard because I think the episode handled pretty well. But I could definitely see the soap opera elements that you both describe. But I think to sort of answer your question, Kat, about like why do these other three people have to suffer because of Jonathan Schenck's character's mistakes. Well, you could even say that these three are profiting off her work rather than, you know, because he's basically taken all the credit. Like, and I think she was the witch, whose name I can't think of at the moment, so I'll just call her that. She was happy to do that because she was like all into Jonathan Schenck's character, and of course he tossed her aside, and so this is her getting her revenge. And so I guess she has pretty much every right to, especially going after the people that, you know, again, profited off the actual work that she did with all these horror books that have happened. And I do like the fact that, like, even the other horror novels that Schenck's character wrote also come into play, because the things that happen to these other characters when they get turned into demons is reflected from that book as well. I thought it was pretty cool. And I like the fact that, why is this book episode called The Circle? Because not only is it the name of the book that's in it, you realize at the end, this is not the first time this has happened. This is probably the 100th time, because it's a time loop type of story.
It's a curse that she's put on them, isn't it?
Yeah. And they have to relive this whole nightmare over and over again. And of course, they're not aware that they're in a time loop as well, which I think is also kind of refreshing. So yeah, they have to just keep being punished over and over and over again. So overall, yeah, I really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really fun idea. I think of the episodes that Schenck and his co-writer, Richard Schusmar, who's also a horror novelist in his own right, of the episodes they've done between Masters and this show, I think this is definitely their best screenplay that they've written. And I think it's sort of, and Eduardo Rodriguez definitely, like, he definitely tackled this episode like it was an Evil Dead type of story. So, and he just, like, you can tell he's relishing the opportunity to kind of play with that kind of formula with this episode.
I really liked that about it.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting, different one. And I did like the style and how it looked visually as well.
Yeah.
And I would say, even though this was, like, you know, the very last episode of Fear Itself, I think it was probably a pretty strong episode to end the series on. Because I sort of noticed, like with Masters, like, that series, the first season ended with Imprint, which is, like, one of the most disturbing things that has ever done for television. And then, of course, when Masters ended with season two, it ended with probably one of their worst episodes with Dream Cruise. So it was nice that they went out with, even though, yeah, Fear Itself, despite its flaws as an overall series, the series kind of, at least for me anyway, kind of ended with a bang with this episode, which I thought was a pretty solid and enjoyable one.
Yeah, I would say I much enjoyed watching this than Dream Cruise or whatever that episode was of Masters. Yeah.
But Marcy, what are your final thoughts and rating for The Circle?
Yeah, well, I've actually given the same rating to all three of these episodes and I didn't even realize it. But again, something I enjoyed, I thought it was above average, especially for, I guess, what we've seen with Fear Itself. Like, the last five episodes were really good stuff, pretty solid. And again, a shame that they didn't air on TV. They just cancelled it after, you know, without doing the full season run. But yeah, again, decent episode. Definitely check it out. And I give it 3 out of 5 Jonathan Schenck's doing Jonathan Schenck things. P.S. I do love you, Jonathan Schenck. Please come on our podcast one day.
Yes. And he can yell at me for an hour.
And you're a really good-looking silver fox.
I completely agree.
And what are your final thoughts on this episode, Kat?
This is probably my favourite episode of all the episodes that I've watched from Fear Itself, mainly because, like I said, it felt like an episode of Grimm, and I love, 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 love that TV show. I love Supernatural. Anything where this kind of story writing would take place in an episode. So I just felt like I was watching some of my favorite TV shows. But a few things for me would be that it did feel like an episode of Days of Our Lives in some parts. I was kind of confused by that because I just didn't understand. I think I like left the room for 2 minutes and I came back and there was like a whole like Days of Our Lives episode transformation happening. And I was like, oh crap, what have I missed? But yeah, I give it 3.5 out of 5. I really, really, really enjoyed it. I loved the whole concept that this has been on a time loop, that this keeps reoccurring. And I wonder now, is that what happens every time that the time loop occurs, that it comes around? Does the same thing happen? Does something different happen? Yeah, I think it's really great.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because, like, when the wife, played by Ashley Scott, looks at the book, it's like that, like, it's like, and I can't remember the exact phrase that was written, but it was like everything went back to normal at a specific time. And it's been written in the back of the book hundreds and hundreds of times. Yeah. So I don't know whether it's because, you know, that they leave that in the book and that it's like a shocking revelation to her. Every time she reads the book, it's like, oh, this has happened before. And then, of course, it resets just after she dies. And then they have to go through it again, unawares that they're in a loop. Yeah. But overall, I really enjoyed this episode. It's definitely one of the stronger episodes of Fear Itself for me. Definitely one of the more creepier ones as well, because I think Eduardo Rodriguez definitely brings a lot of creepy elements in the story. And it's a good kind of like cabin in the woods, like one set type of story. Yeah. And I think it handles it pretty well. Like it has that sort of claustrophobic feeling through it. And I think the cast do pretty well with their performances. And it was just like a pretty cool kind of little spin on Evil Dead. If, like I said, if Stephen King was given an opportunity to write it, because I imagine this would be how he would do an Evil Dead film if he actually wrote it.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
But so if I had the rate, I give it about 3.5 out of 5 as well. But so that is the end of Fear Itself, Marzi.
I'm so sad.
Indeed.
But also not, because that means we get to move on to different things and new things that I haven't seen, and I'm very excited for the future of Podcasts of Horror.
Indeed. I guess, like, before we... have you watched all the episodes yet of Fear Itself, Kat?
No, I've just been picking and choosing at the moment when I have time. I'll put it on while I'm working. So I still... Yeah. I think I still have, like, 4 episodes to go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, Marcy, like, overall, how does, like... Having watched all 13 episodes, how does, like, at least Fear Itself compare to Masters but also on its own as a series? Well,
yeah, I think on its own, it's a pretty solid anthology type of show. It's not as good as Masters. There was a lot more budget and stuff, you know, on a different network and so forth. But I think if given a maybe, if they gave it maybe a bit more money behind it, a bit more faith in it, you could have had, you know, a few seasons of something really interesting. But as it stands, it's an interesting watch. It's worth watching. I don't regret watching it, even with the really shit episodes. At least it's something, you know. But, it was an interesting little, you know, 13-episode run that, you know, we got to watch, and I watched it for the first time.
Yeah, and I guess for me, revisiting the series again, like, it definitely is a mixed bag overall, but I think it... For most part, it was simple. There are a lot more okay episodes rather than full-on bad or even full-on great. And I guess in a way that gives the series kind of successful because, you know, anthologies can always be hit and miss. There's definitely some episodes that could easily have been in part of Masters, for sure. But like you said, like I think if they had a bit more money into the budget and also a bit more faith behind it, maybe worked on the scripts a little bit more and maybe... didn't feel like they had the tone down because they were on a network, like a TV network show, a prime time one, I should say. I think it probably would have been better. But overall, I think it's a pretty watchable one. Some episodes, of course, better than others. But yeah, it was kind of interesting kind of revisiting this show after so long and just sort of seeing how I felt about it overall. But our journey with Mick Garris's anthology works isn't quite done yet because on the next episode... which will be episode 20, we're going to be diving in the most recent anthology work that he has done, which, of course, is a film, which, of course, is Nightmare Cinema. So we'll be talking about that on the next episode of Podcasters.
Yeah.
And then after that, we'll be moving away from everything Mick Garris created, and we'll be exploring anthology films and also anthology TV shows as well.
Yes, branching out, doing a bit more different things, and I'm very excited.
Indeed. And also, Kat, thank you very much for coming back on the show.
Thanks for
you're
having
always,
me.
You're always a very awesome guest to have on. And you're, yes. And once we go into the next phase of podcasters, you'll have to come back on and either talk on two anthology films that we've paired up or even talk about a season of our anthology show. Because I know one of the first TV shows we're going to be tackling will be Channel Zero.
Ooh,
so we're going to go through all
yet.
Those, all four of those seasons, but we're going to interchange them and, like, tackle one season every 2 months in between movies. And we've got quite a cool list of films to talk about. So you'll have to come back on and join us for one of those episodes.
Definitely.
Yeah. If not, it'll definitely get me watching it again. Well, yeah. Watching it for the first time. I've seen a lot of talk on Twitter about Channel Zero. So
I guess
we haven't seen it. So
it's basically become the new Masters in sense like it's a one of the more underrated anthology shows. And some say it's probably one of the best ones out there that have been in the past few years.
Yeah,
so.
I'm pretty excited for us to check that out soon. So, yeah.
Should be good.
Definitely.
Thank you for being our lovely guest. And where can people find you on the internet so they can check out all your cool stuff?
Yeah, so if you basically follow me on Twitter at @Katstead_, you will see everything that I do. It's just easier to go to the one spot and go from there. So, yeah, follow me on Twitter.
And, of course, people can find us at supermarcy.com. It is our base of operations, and the Super Network is on all your social media platforms. Again, it's probably easier if you just go to our link tree, which is linktr.ee/thesupernetwork. So check us out there. And, of course, me, Pestily, on Twitter is twitter.com/supermarcy. And I'm on Letterboxd at @super_marcy as well. Bede.
People want to find me personally. They can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/bejamine. Or my Letterboxd account at letterboxd.com/bejamine. And of course, you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com with my reviews and columns. And just before we wrap up, I just remembered Eduardo Rodriguez also directed the straight-to-video sequel Fright Night 2. And not the one from the 80s, it's the one from the that starred Colin Farrell and Anton Yelchin.
Oh,
okay.
Which I could easily talk about for hours because it's basically another remake of the same story, which doesn't make sense. But anyways, thank you for everyone for listening to this episode of Podcasters of Horror. We hope you all enjoyed it. And we'll see you all next month for episode 20. See you, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark, do 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 do. Surfy shark, do 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 do. And now back to the show.